Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. And finally, it's time for another edition of Garden Talk. Pleased to welcome back Bob Tomisch. Bob is senior lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison and UW Extension. Always great to have Bob come by to talk. And we can usually when he's here, we cover a pretty broad range of things. And certainly we will probably be doing that today as well. Everything from the flowers to the vegetables to the trees and the shrubs and maybe the lawn, too. So if you have a question for Bob, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Bob, welcome back.
Hey, it's always fun to be here.
I looked out at my wife this morning, said, hey, get out there and pick some more tomatoes. I said, gee, I just picked. She said, oh, we got a bunch of ripe ones out there.
Well, you're lucky you still have some because there's a lot of people with tomatoes that the plants went down because of disease, and so they don't have the production like they did earlier in the season.
Well, we've had a pretty good production. We have an email, not relating to tomatoes, but relating to wild roses. I believe Joan emailed us from Clark County, and she said, a number of years ago, I transplanted a wild rose from our woods onto one of my perennial beds. The rose bloomed in the woods, but hasn't bloomed since I moved it. However, that's not my concern. I'd like to get it out of my bed because it's spreading. I have tried digging out the roots, but I always miss some. I usually cut back the growth when it gets too full. I usually just cut back the growth when it gets too full. I also have peonies in the same bed that have spread. I cut those back also, but would really like to get rid of both the peonies and the wild roses. Is there any hope without totally ruining the whole bed? And she says in passing, I don't like to use pesticides if I can help it.
Ouch, ouch. That's the hard one. Basically, digging like she's doing is about the only way you can try to eradicate it, keep on top of it. If you start in the spring and as either the roses or the peonies start showing any green tissue, if you can cut it off right away and slowly starve it out, that's one possibility. Of course, I would suggest using something like Roundup. When you cut the wood on the rose, treat that cut right away with the Roundup material and it'll get down to the root system, and that's probably the best way to eradicate it. But that's her choice as to what she's going to try to do. Going the other route, and part of the she's doing digging, trying to get it out, and she's leaving little propagules behind, and that's why they're coming up. Even the peonies, if she knocks off a piece of that tuberous root, it'll start growing someplace. So that's the choice she has to make, I guess.
Got to keep at it if you're not going to use some sort of chemical, or unless you kill the whole, you can kill the whole bed and start over. You could cover the bed.
Well, some people
will
actually do that. They'll dig up the whole bed and kind of set the other plant materials they want to keep going, the other perennial flowers, and then they'll throw a black plastic over that for about 6 weeks. And that way, as the rose is spreading, or anything that starts growing there, it doesn't see any light, and without any light, it slowly starves itself to death. But you'd probably do that starting early in the spring. But it takes about 6 weeks of black cover in order to accomplish that.
Let's take some calls. Greg and Stevens Point, we are on to you now. Greg, thanks for calling.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for taking my call. My question's kind of simple. I have some perennials and some annual plants, I guess mostly perennials, as far as those that you can take in and those you can't take in during the winter, those that need to have that hibernation period. I've got small decorative trees at Arbor Day. I've got coleuses, which actually I've tried, and they've actually last through the winter. And I know there's a difference. They're annuals. But I'm wondering, is there any way to tell, or are there certain plants, like, for example, we've got beautiful chrysanthemums. The mums have to be dormant during that year as far as the perennials. I can't bring them in and then put their containers back out again. Just like some guidance on that.
Ooh, that's a real long question. It's knowing your plant material will be helpful, first of all. On the mums, some of those, they should make the winter just left in the ground. They'll resprout each year. Usually those that you buy as annuals, like the begonias and that, you bring them indoors, not so much for the rest period, but because they can't tolerate temperatures below maybe 45 degrees or freezing temperatures, which will actually kill the cell tissue, and those are usually from tropical regions. So step one would be try to find a book that has pictures of plants, or maybe contact somebody locally that's familiar with perennials and have them point out which ones you could leave in the bed and which ones you could try to bring inside.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we'll take some more calls here. Let's go to Bonnie in Lone Rock. Hi, Bonnie.
Good morning. Thank you.
Sure.
I have a question about shrub pruning. I have a meadowlark forsythia and a Miss Kim Korean lilac. The Korean lilac keeps its shape nicely. The forsythia is starting to get tight in the center, and it's starting to look like wild hair instead of its shape.
Yeah, okay.
Some of the forsythia does get rather wild. You've got two different plants there that we have to treat slightly differently. If you don't want to miss any bloom period, a couple things you can do is there's a bulletin on pruning shrubs, which would be at the learning store that you can look up on your computer. But what they're going to suggest in there is taking out about one-third of the stems in that crown of that shrub. And each year take out one-third, and it'll send up new shoots, which will flower. And usually you can do that in the spring. The Miss Kim... Again, that one shouldn't be quite as wild. Are you trying to keep it smaller statured or what?
No, it's actually perfectly shaped. There isn't anything wrong with it. I'm wondering if it requires any renewal pruning ever.
Usually with some of those shrubs after 5 to 10 years, somewhere in there, they're going to get old wood. And you'll be able to detect that because they'll have fewer blooms. And a way to generate new shoots is, again, taking out about one-third of the stems. And this will send up some new shoots. Which will be younger, more juvenile. And you take out the old stems over about a three-year period, and then the new shoots should take over, and you should have good flowering.
Miss Kim will look just as good as she did when she was a young guy.
Yeah, right.
I have a little complication. I will be down south from beginning of January until the beginning of May. So when should I do this pruning?
When you're taking out one-third of the, you still have stems that are going to produce flowers, and that's what you're trying to do. So, May is a little bit late. Usually we like to suggest having this done in March or early April. But in your case, you could do it when you get back. And remember, only take out one-third of the stems, and this will allow the stems that continue to exist to produce the flowers that you want.
Thanks, Bonnie, and good luck. Appreciate your call. Bob Tomich, Senior Lecturer in the Department of Horticulture, Larry Mueller, Jim Packard, our producer, on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Bob Tomich, our guest on this edition of Garden Talk, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for listening in. Give us a call with your question at 800-642-1234. Let's turn to Lisa and Nina. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I have a maple tree that we purchased probably about 10 years ago, and the branches started growing. They were fine and healthy, and now at the ends, the leaves die back, and they turn brown and yellow, and they fall off. And we had it treated this last year and this year in the spring. They said it has chlorosis, but it doesn't seem to be getting any better. Is there something I can do to make this tree look healthier?
Are you in a very kind of a wet environment where it sits?
No, we're not. We're in a clay area. Nina's real clay.
Yeah. Okay. But it still might have a hard pan below, and that's what's keeping the excess water there.
Is that what it is?
I'm okay. Usually with maples, we don't see chlorosis as often as we do with some of the other trees because maples can stand the like an acid environment. A couple of things you could try doing is mulch around the tree, maybe 4 or 5 feet out. With about 3-4 inches of mulch.
Okay.
That'll keep the soil a little bit cooler and moist during appropriate times. That might help out. That's about all you can do on that one. It's probably the wrong tree for the wrong location when you put it there. And so that's why it's having some difficulty.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. And on to Scott in Cumberland. Hi, Scott.
Yeah, good morning. The reason I was calling is we received a crabapple tree, 4 years ago in honor of our daughter. It blossomed in the spring and had fruit on it, but then a week or two ago here, it blossomed again, and I was just wondering if that was an unusual occurrence with a crabapple tree or a variant, what it is.
Yeah, did the leaves kind of fall off the tree in July?
No.
Oh, okay. A few things with crabs. They will blossom at this time of the year, or not all nice and full, but they will have blossoms on the tree. Usually those trees that blossom, a couple things that are happening. One is that they're very susceptible to apple scab, and a good portion of the leaves fall off, and we see that in many of the municipalities. If that's not the case and it's holding its leaves fairly well, it's the growing conditions that we had. It was rather warm. We've had plenty of rain. And so some of those buds are just a little bit ahead of themselves, and that's what's happening. You'll still have a blossom. You know, those that aren't blooming will bloom next year, and so
you'll be
life will carry on.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Scott. And Wayne in La Crosse, we are on to you. Hi, Wayne.
Hi. I got a question. How do you get rid of the small shoots of, I guess you call it scrub oak, the old, they're like an old tree that grow in the woods? How do you get rid of the little ones that keep coming up?
They keep coming up around the stump, right?
Yep, or all over. They're just growing all over the place, too.
Well, you got those coming up between the stumps are probably from acorns that have been deposited there by our little friendly squirrels and that type of thing. But next to the stump, if you want to get rid of a large number, you could always, when you make your cut, treat that with Roundup. The unfortunate part is that if you have a stand of oak, the roots are connected, and so you might knock out one that you might want to control. So the other thing you can do is, as you cut off that stump, take a 5-gallon bucket, place it over it so it's a dark environment. As those shoots start growing, they will tend to, the chlorophyll won't develop and they'll die.
Okay.
But you'll need to do that almost the whole growing season.
But the biggest problem I have is the little shoots coming out all over where...
Those are squirrels, probably.
Yeah, that has to do with an acorn population.
By cutting them off, will that stop them?
Well,
let's say like a nipper and
yep.
just cut them down.
And the time of year you do that, you should do it probably in August.
Okay.
Yeah, because at that time, many trees, young shoots, they're going to start preparing for winter. And if you cut off the top, there's no leaves there to intercept this photoperiod that we have. Not that there's a lot of research on that, but, there's the potential that you might be able to control them that way.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have Denise sent us an email. I have had 3 pumpkins that have been ripe and orange in the backyard for the past month or more. When do I actually pick them to prevent them from rotting in the yard? They're on grass because I'm a first-time gardener. They outgrow the garden substantially. I did pick them up and gently move them a week or so ago. But they're all still on the vine.
Okay, well, that means the vine is healthy. Some people can't brag about that at this time of the year. Okay, what you can do is if they're orange in the color you want, make sure you leave the stem on the plant, maybe 4 or 5 inches. Cut it off, and then just simply... allow them to cure for about 10 days in the sun, and then you can move them into a cooler environment of about 50 degrees, and you should be able to hold them till the Halloween period, or I don't know if they're eating pumpkins, mm-hmm. but if they're large ones, they're probably more ornamental.
Jennifer from Duluth, Minnesota, emailed us, says there are a lot of fruit trees available at our local nurseries. Prices this time of year are great. Is it too late to plant an apple tree or a plum tree? Now, she's in Duluth. Any concerns about a tree that has been in a relatively small pot all summer, and any tips you might have?
Well, a couple of things. Yes, if it's in a pot, you can plant it any time. The other issue to look at is how well the nursery or whatever the sales environment, how well they've kept them watered through the growing season so they're not stressed. But you should be able to plant them. I would plant them and keep them watered at least once a week until the ground soil freezes. The other thing is to put a good layer of mulch, maybe 3-4 inches of bark chips out, maybe in about a 2-foot circle around the plant. That'll protect allow those roots to establish themselves and then protect them from the severe cold of winter that first year. So you can still plant. The other thing is if you're selecting fruit trees, I often encourage people, at least with apples, to look for disease-resistant varieties, and there's a publication that lists some of those, that way you're not fighting the apple scab and cedar apple rust issues. You still have to deal with insects, but at least the diseases aren't there.
And Bill in Door County says, could you suggest a grass seed that will grow in Door County clay soil?
Well, that's more for the turf specialist, but I'll take a kind of a shot at it. There's a good bulletin on seeding lawns.
Mm-hmm.
That's at thelearningstore.com, and you can kind of pull that up. It's probably going to suggest to you the Kentucky bluegrasses. And normally our fall seeding, we're looking at, we want about 6 weeks from the time we seed until the soil freezes. If you're shorter than that, sometimes the grass doesn't get established. But I would say the fescues or the Kentucky bluegrass would be something to look at. Usually when you buy grass seed, it's in a mix. Avoid those that say perennial ryegrass materials because the perennial ryegrass looks great within a week. The other plants take about 3 weeks to germinate and establish themselves. So it looks really great, but then when winter comes, a lot of those perennial ryegrasses will freeze off. And so when you're buying seed, it's usually the inexpensive seed that has a lot of perennial ryegrass. Try to avoid those.
On to Gail in Iola. Hi, Gail.
Hi, thank you. I have two questions. My first question is the big canna bulbs, the tropical canna bulb lilies.
Yep.
I was wondering if you can after it freezes and they freeze, if you cut them down to the ground, could you possibly take like maybe 2-3 bales of straw and lay them on the top and leave them in the ground?
Probably
for the winter?
Probably not, because those are so tropical that if they're subjected to temperatures below, I'm guessing right now, 45 or 50 degrees, it'll start deteriorating, and the soft rot organisms will outgrow the plant's ability. So I would say your best bet on those is to bring them in.
Okay. Now, my second question is, and this has been happening for about the last 3-4 summers. I'm very a big stickler on rotating crops, and what the problem I've been having with is my onions. I let them, you know, I put them in as sets,
mm-hmm.
and then when the tops die off, I let them sit in the ground for a week or two. And if it's real wet, I pull them, and I let them sit on top of the soil for, a couple days. Then I take them into a dry area to cure. And what I'm finding is the outside of the onion, you look at the onion, they're beautiful, they're hard, and when you cut into them, the very center, and it's not with all of them, but, like every 3-4 onions that I take to use, the very center has kind of like a slimy, rotten spot. It doesn't go through the whole onion. It's just in the very center. And I can't figure out if it's the moisture or if it's a disease. It's just been happening the last 4 summers with my, and I plant about 4 to 6 pounds of sets.
Yep. And do you notice little black spots on the leaves of when they are growing?
Nope. They look beautiful. The tops get really big, and then when they start to die off, you know how they'll fall to the ground?
Yep.
And then I usually leave them in the ground for, maybe a week just to kind of cure them.
Yeah.
And then I pull them out, and I put them in a real nice dry spot for curing. It's up in the top of our attic.
Yep. Well, what I'd suggest there is I would send one of or two of your onions that you find that in into the pathology lab and let Brian take a look at it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing that there's a fungal problem either in the soil, which might be coming up through the root system, and that's how it's getting there,
mm-hmm.
or something from the top. But he will be able to culture that slimy material, and when it starts producing spores, identify what it is, and then also give you a recommendation as to how to prevent that.
Okay.
And
so that's
probably something you have that's already in the soil. I know you're rotating, but, we go through with the rototiller in one plot, and then we go to the next one without washing it, and so we might be spreading the organism that way. Also, many of the root rots are non-selective. They'll pick on a large or wide variety of plant.
Okay, and it seems to be hitting more of the later onion. Because I do like a purple, and I'll do a white, and then I do the winter yellow onion, and it seems more that it's in the winter yellow one.
Yep. Well, different cultivars have different degrees of resistance, and so that may be playing a role there.
Yeah.
But send a sample in to Brian. Go down to your local extension office. They'll help you out, or you can go on to the internet and just do Plant Pathology Lab. And in there, I talk about Brian Huddleston. he will have a procedure there to send the samples in.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And as he always says, don't send it late in the week.
No,
so
send it on Monday.
Send it on Monday or Tuesday.
I walk past his lab once in a while, and you can almost get there because the odor is so strong. Oh, potatoes are the worst.
Oh, they are awful. I worked for Armstrong Produce Potatoes way back when I was a kid, and a young man in college, 18, 19 years old, and boy, those rotten potatoes, when you had to pick those out.
Yep.
Ooh, they really smell. Let's go to Michelle in Waupaca. Hi, Michelle.
Hi there.
What can we do for you?
Well, I'm calling. I live in a woodsy neighborhood, and I think what we have is like an invasive buckthorn.
Yep. Yeah.
Does that sound familiar?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, as a group, what we can do to, I mean, they grow, as you know, like, gosh, 8 or 10 feet
yep.
In a season. And I'm just wondering what we can do to.
There's a couple of bulletins. DNR has a bulletin, and also we have one in Extension on controlling buckthorn. I would just go on the internet, and you should be able to find that one. Just put UW Extension and buckthorn, and I think the bulletin might come up. But what they suggest doing, if you're at a group, that's the best way to do it. Do the cutting in the spring and then treating that stump with something like Roundup or something like that to knock it out. You're going to have to stick with it because there's seeds that have fallen on the ground, and they're going to reset a new population. So it's something that you have to do over a 4 or 5 year period.
And you do need the cooperation of your neighbors. So that's a really good idea, Michelle, to get everybody, as many people as involved as possible, because if your next door neighbor isn't doing it, you're going to have buckthorn.
Now, I have a couple that are fairly close to the house. Would it make sense to cut any of those right now in the fall?
You could cut them off and then still treat that stump with Roundup. It'll
warm
knock
enough.
It
needs to be, what, 50 degrees?
Yeah, 45, 50.
45, 50.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. And we'll go to Dan next, I believe. Let's go to Dan. Hi, Dan in Partyville.
Good morning. I've got a question. I guess it's kind of similar to the last lady's. I've got a stand of pine, probably 3 to 4 acres, red pine. That's being taken over by elms. There's some that are probably 4 inches in diameter, and then there's some that are really small. I want to cut them down so they don't resprout, because elms resprout really good. Can I cut them down now and put Roundup on them, or should I wait till spring?
It'll still work now, because the plant, in fact, you're absorbing it now, the Roundup, and it kind of messes up the physiology because the tree is supposed to be preparing for winter. And so you can still treat. Your best, treating is, during the growing season.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks very much for calling. And we'll turn to Mike in Coon Valley next. Hi, Mike.
Hi. We got some volunteer oaks and birch growing under some canopies that we'd like to move out in our yard, and the oaks are between 6 and 10 inches tall. Some of the birches are maybe up to 18 inches tall. Should they stay in the ground where they're at for another year, let them get more mature, or is it a good time to move them right now?
I'd move them probably as we get into October. Let them, if we have a good frost, then move them and then keep them watered. Those oaks, if you give them another year, they're going to have such a big root system down there that you're going to have a real challenge digging out some of those. The birch will move fairly easily.
Okay.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Emily emailed us and said we had tomatoes in two areas and had a very good crop, but have lost all the plants to the blight. A friend told us that he had applied gypsum to his garden this year after experiencing blight last year and had no problems this season. Do you recommend applying gypsum?
Well, gypsum is something that should be applied after a soil test, whether or not you need that calcium product on there. I'm just guessing that he probably applied that, and he might have had some more. There are certain varieties that are more resistant than others, and there's a publication on that, too, that Amanda Givens has put together for us. And so he may have some of the more resistant type. The problem that we're seeing is that the tomatoes that are more resistant to the blight are not necessarily being carried by the nurseries. And so if you order the seeds, start your own, you have a better chance of getting what you want than if you go to the regular suppliers that have the standard Wisconsin 55 and a number of those other varieties.
Bob Tomisch, our guest today, senior lecturer in the Department of Horticulture, UW-Madison and UW Extension. I'm Larry Mueller here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking gardening today with Bob Tomisch, Larry Mueller here. We'll take some calls again. And Kevin in La Crosse up next. Hi, Kevin.
Hi there. I have an old variety of hen and chicks that I got from my grandmother that she had growing out in her perennial bed, and I just put them in a container, and I'm wondering if they need a dormancy period or if I can just bring them in once the weather starts getting colder.
Well, the hen and chicks should be hardy enough to make the winter, and I would think they would do better if you planted them out where you want them rather than trying to overwinter them indoors. You might have better luck.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, thanks for calling. And Jan in Delafield, hello.
Good morning. I have Datura that I replant every year from seed, not always successfully. I recently learned that I can take the rhizomes or roots and preserve them over winter, and they'll grow again in spring. I don't know how to do that.
Okay, that plant is more of a tropical plant. And so if you treat them just like you would a dahlia tuber, and one of the problems you might have is the Datura might be a little more susceptible to some of the soft rots, if you can try to do that. But if you go on the internet and do a quick search on that one, overwintering that plant you suggested, somebody might have some publication on that to give you a little more details. But my guess is to try to treat them like you would a dahlia root.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. We're going to open line. We'll get you on pretty quickly. Gary and Merrill, hello.
Yes, hello. I've got a hard maple tree about 13 inches at the base. It has perfect bark. Branches are perfect half the way up. And then from that point up, the bark extremely scaly. The limbs are dying off. And I was thinking about topping the top half of the tree. And I was wondering if it would ever resemble a normal maple tree after that, and when would be the best time to do it?
Okay, the problem you're dealing with is most likely some type of fungal problem that's probably come up through the root system and is in the cambial zone, and it's plugging the vascular tissue, so those top branches aren't getting enough water, and that's why they're dying. My suggestion there is I would find another tree to plant a little ways from it. You can go with a hard maple as long as you're probably 20 feet, 25 feet away. And then as those plants become established, take out the sickly-looking one. So regardless of what you do to it, it's going to continue dying back because that disease is in the bark, even on the trunk area.
All right. Probably not the news you wanted to hear.
The dead and dying, you know.
Oh, all right. Jeff in Spring Grove, Illinois. Hello to you.
Good morning. Thanks for the program. I have a question regarding a rhododendron. It's on the east side of the house. It doesn't get much sun in the morning. It only has three leaves on it right now. I wonder what I should do with that in the winter or in the spring, whatever your choice is. And then one other quick question is on apple trees. I haven't treated them for a couple of years, and it's an enormous tree. I'm wondering when I can cut that back and how I should treat it in the season. I really have done nothing with it for a couple of few years.
Okay. The rhododendrons, where are you located?
Spring Grove, Illinois.
Okay. Yeah, the rhododendrons are kind of borderline when it comes to hardiness, depending on the variety that you have. There are some that, even up into Wisconsin, they will perform fairly well in the southern part of the state. The azaleas are much better or more hardy than the rhododendrons. As for care, some people try to kind of make a wire mesh and then up around the plant and then fill that with leaf tissue just to kind of temper the weather. And then in the spring, as soon as the snow melts, pull it off so that plant will start growing. And also mulching that soil around with a couple 3 inches of bark chips is going to help protect the roots. So with the rhododendrons, you're kind of... the climate's going to get you.
Even in Illinois.
Right. As for the apple tree, doing some pruning on the tree, never take out more than one-third of the branches. You can, depending on how you want to handle it, some people try to take out some of the top of the tree so they can work with the lower branches. Because if you have pest problems there, whether it's insects or diseases, you're going to have to come in with a pest management program, either organic or using chemicals. But the whole thing is you have to have it there in the spring as soon as the leaf tissue shows up. You have to have the product there, the organic or the chemical pesticide, to ward off or protect against the spores, and then later on to take care of any insects that are laying eggs in that area. So a spray program starting early and then continuing about once a week through the entire growing season in order to successfully get ahead of that.
Okay, terrific. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And let's go to David in Neenah next. David, hello.
Hi. I've got a question. I'm watching my parents' house this week while they're out of town, and I was in their backyard, and I think it's an ash tree, is completely covered with this really, really fine silk, like spider web, and it's so fine that when you look up above your head, it looks like the tree is almost covered in sap. And it's got these tiny, tiny little bugs, millions of them. They look almost like sawdust. They're like red or orange colored, and this has only happened within the past 2 days, and I've never seen anything like this before.
Sure, you get there, and the parents go, and everything goes to heck.
Exactly. They let the kids walk the house, and the trees die off.
Well, I think Bob may have some answers.
It's probably aphids that you're seeing, and those little silky streaks that you're seeing coming down are, when they get done eating, they get rid of something. And so that's very possible. Usually that comes down in drops and that type of thing. The other thing it could be is sometimes there's a hatch of spiders that might be feeding on the aphids, and they drop a string down and then usually blow away. So it's some insect.
This is like, it's all covering the trunk and all the branches except the dead ones. I mean, it looks like somebody came and took lacquer and painted the entire trunk of the tree except for the dead branches.
Oh.
Yeah.
I've never seen it that thick.
No, I haven't either. You might want to send a sample in.
Oh, boy.
I would send that one to probably Phil Pelletieri, the entomologist.
If you can take a picture.
Yep, a close-up of the leaves, if you can see the insect.
And I'd take a long picture, a close-up picture. Have you got a digital camera?
Yeah, we can take that. Yeah,
and get a good picture of the insect itself, and you can email those.
Even mail it to you, and then...
Or email it straight to Phil.
Yep, Phil Pelletieri.
The Insect Diagnostic Lab at the UW-Madison, Phil Pelletieri.
Okay. Yeah, we can take care of that, yeah. All right, well, thanks for the guesses, and we'll send him an email.
All right, great. And you probably have some answers, but I've never seen it that thick before.
No, I haven't, unless there's a high aphid population, and it's we call it honeydew instead of the other word.
Yeah.
And that might be on there, but it's interesting what might be happening there.
Let's go to Don in Washburn. Hello, Don.
Hi. About 4 years ago, I bought three weeping willows that hang over our pond, and they grew like crazy. this year, the middle one has wilted, and it's just a brown stick. Another one that was about 15 feet tall, I noticed the sapsuckers out there on the trunk. So I went out there, and I sprayed and painted and so forth. I've given them 10-10-10 and some black dirt, and that thing is starting to wilt. The big one that was all the way up to 20 feet, that's showing some stress. And I'm wondering, what do you think might be at the roots or whatever of just weeping willows?
Yeah, sometimes weeping willows have a problem with fungal problems that get in there. And the way you've described it, I'm guessing that's why the center one has died. And because the roots are connected, it's the disease has traveled from one tree to the next.
I planted them 15 feet apart.
Yeah. The other thing is, with some of the weeping willow varieties that are out there, some are not really hardy for Wisconsin. And so it's important that you pick a variety that will tolerate our cold temperatures. And so that could be the other possibility.
Remember what you did 4 years ago. That's
the
problem.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And Frank and Adams, let's go to you now. Hi, Frank.
Yes, sir. Larry, first I want to thank you for your advice on mulching in the garden.
Yes.
You said if you see a weed, you don't have enough mulch. Well, I fixed it. I waded through the mulch all summer. I had no weeds.
Good.
Now I want to know, how do I take care of this mulch now? What do I do to make it rich enough to make a, you know, to turn it under and make soil out of it? What do you do to...
Yeah.
Well, you're at the right time of the year right now. If you go out there and spade it down, so you get it down about 8 inches and cover it with the soil, and then add a little fertilizer over the lawn area or over the garden area after you've worked that grass into it, about 2 pounds per 100 square feet, I think would work.
Okay. So now if I...
What you're doing is feeding the bacteria to help break down the lawn grass.
So if I fertilize it now and then till it under, that would be the way to do it.
I would till it under and then fertilize.
Very good.
Take out the, if you had like diseased tomato plants or anything like that, clean the garden out of that stuff.
Oh, yeah, that I already done.
Okay. All right. You're on the right track, Frank.
They out, my tomatoes, grew so beautiful, great big tomatoes, and started ripening, and then the leaves all died.
Yep. Yeah. You might want to take a look at some of the garden catalogs for some of the more disease-resistant types of tomatoes, and it might give you a little...
That's what I was supposed to have.
Yeah, sometimes it gets...
They're not completely disease-resistant. No. We call them tolerant, and so they'll tolerate some of the disease, but if the infection gets worse or bad enough, they will kill the plants.
Good luck, Frank. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. And... question from Diane has two big leaf hydrangeas. This is the second summer they didn't bloom. They're healthy, large, and bushy. I do prune them down in the late fall to about 2 inches. And is this pruning causing them not to bloom?
Shade would be one of the issues that are there.
Yeah.
And
big issue.
Yep, that's what I'm guessing. The other thing is. It could be that some of the stress of winter and that type of thing is just not getting enough growth in there. So it's probably plant stress.
Okay. There you go. Bob Tomich, senior lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison and UW Extension. He'll be with us up until 12:30 today here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest on this edition of Garden Talk, Bob Tomich, senior lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison and UW Extension. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you so much for listening in, and please join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's turn to Katie in Burlington next. Katie, hello.
Hi. I now have two questions. I called in with one, but now I have two.
Okay.
One is about apples, one is about tomatoes. The one about apples is that we have land and then there's like a row of trees and bushes and then there's a farm field behind our house. And last year there was an apple tree there that just had tons of apples on it. And then I was walking up there just recently, I noticed, oh, there's no apples. Now my brother says that the trees are biannual, and I didn't know this, but is this true?
Yes. Certain trees are biennial, fruit apple trees, and certain varieties will do that. They have a heavy crop 1 year, and think of it as the tree is feeding so many apples to try to get it up to full size that it doesn't really produce very many flower buds the second year. The other thing this year is we had some late frosts during the month of May when fruit trees were in bloom, and that could have impacted. There might have been flowers on it, and if there was a frost within that period, that knocked out a lot of the potential for production.
Okay, and then the other question was about tomatoes, because somebody else was asking about tomatoes, and it made me think, last year I planted tomatoes, and they were Roma tomatoes and, like, smaller little tomatoes, I don't even know what you call them, but I thought they had blight, some of them. It was, like, looked like they had brown patches on them, and I just kind of left them there, and I know you're supposed to cover them and all this kind of stuff, and, you know, get rid of the blight. And then I didn't. And then this year, I have so many tomato plants because those tomatoes that I just left on the ground reseeded, and no problem whatsoever. They look fantastic. What do you think?
Well, those that reseeded themselves are just probably coming into production now. They're later, and so they started later. You're given it enough time, like those that you set out as transplants in mid-May, the disease is already impacting those plants. Those that started from seed probably didn't start growing till early June. And so they're just a little later, and so that's why you're seeing fewer disease problems.
Okay. It was just interesting. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Lee in Delafield, we turn to you now. Hi, Lee.
Hi. How you doing this afternoon?
Great. Thank you for calling.
I got a question about that imitation mulch that's made out of recycled tires that you can pick up now.
Yeah.
Looks real nice and whatnot, but I'm wondering, is that going to offer the same amount of protection to the frost and whatnot as standard mulch would?
And what are you mulching it? Where are you mulching it?
I just got a flower bed. It's got some roses and some tulips in there and along the front of my house.
Okay.
Not a real big area, you know, but I'm curious, should I expect those things to come back next year?
Well, I haven't read any research on one against the other. The rubber material, probably because it's so dense, it doesn't have the air factor in it like the bark mulches would, and so therefore it might allow more cold to get down in there, but it's going to, you know, provide some protection. The perennials they have in the bed are probably going to make it even without mulch, and so that should work. The other thing is that with the woody product mulches or the compost type mulches, they break down and they provide additional nutrients and compost to the soil, so there's a benefit there, whereas with the rubber mulches, you don't receive that.
Okay. Right. I expected that. Okay.
All right. Okay. Thanks a lot for calling. Bob in Mount Horeb, on to you. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had I lost a young Japanese maple this August. The symptoms were that the leaves turned brown, shriveled up, and the young twigs desiccated. And the axial buds are not formed, so it's not going to make it through the winter. I dug it up. The roots look fine. The soil looks fine. It was watered regularly. The soil is well-drained. I don't think that Japanese maples are susceptible to verticillium, but I was wondering if you might know of any other diseases that it might have succumbed to.
Yep. The other challenge with Japanese maples is that they're a zone 5 plant. And so we're really stretching the growing range when we move them into Wisconsin. Even as I look across the city of Madison, there's an area down along the lakes that usually has some pretty nice Japanese maples that survive from year to year. But you get up into other parts of the city of Madison and Monona and some of that are farther from the lake. They last about 3-4 years, and then they died because of winter injury. It kills the cambial zone, and that's what kind of sounds like it happened in your case. The plant started growing in the spring, but because there was no tissue there to allow the sugars to get back down into the root system just slowly ran out of energy. So that'd be one case. And you might be right. There are some root rot diseases that do impact the Japanese maple, and that might have been another cause.
All right.
Yeah, if it were the sun scald or the winter injury, I would have expected this to have happened towards the end of May or mid-May.
Right. Usually about the 10th of June is when that one happens.
Right, but this didn't happen until first week of August.
Well, what might have happened is it didn't kill it all the way around. There was a little vascular tissue, a little line that was allowing it to kind of carry on, and then that slowly died.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Okay.
Well, great. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Joe in Kingston, driving through, I believe. Hi, Joe.
Hi, I'm passing through. Just say you have a wonderful service that you offer. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I have a situation. We live in a secluded, foresty, wooded area, and we don't have much sunlight, so we don't have much of a lawn. The one area of our lawn that does get quite a considerable amount of sunlight, for where we're at, is over a septic field. We got clayish soil. Would that be all right to plant vegetables there?
Over the septic field?
Yes.
Yeah. Part of the problem is it's hard telling what kind of leachates are working your way up in that type of environment. In fact, if there's publications out there that suggest going with some of the native plant materials or some of those types of perennials and try to stay away from that area with gardening, because you never know what kind of diseases, you know, could get up, in, especially if you're growing root crops like, well, even potatoes and all those. So I wouldn't take the chance.
All right. There you go. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And thanks thanks for driving through. Let's go to Sean in Neillsville next. Hi, Sean.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I got a question about some black locust. How to, I don't know, get rid of it or keep it from growing, because it's like a weed. It just grows wild.
Right. And that's a tree that sends up a lot of suckers from the root system. In fact, if you cut one off, it stimulates more growth. The way to eradicate those would be to cut off, and right after, within, you know, 15 minutes or so, make sure you get some type of material like Roundup onto that stump, and that'll work its way down into the root system. But you're going to have to be persistent, because it only travels so far, and then when the there are suckers that will come up off of those roots, you know, a little farther out. But just keep working at it, and you should be able to get ahead of it.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Richard in Hickston. Hi there.
Hi. How are you today?
Great. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Okay. My wife and I planted a twisted willow several years ago. It was only about 3 or 4 about 2 feet high. Now it's about 20 feet high. And it's earlier this spring, we noticed a lot of the branches, the twisted, were like dried out and dead. Is that a common thing with the twisted willow? Because the rest of it came back green around it, but the inside's like dead.
Well, I'd have to see the tree to give you a better, but what sometimes happens on the sun, if the outer part of the willow tree is looking good, what it's doing is self-pruning. It's getting rid of those branches that aren't getting enough light and enough growth, and I'm guessing it's the smaller ones that are probably 3/8 of an inch or less in diameter, and so it's kind of self-pruning is what's probably happening there.
Yeah. So. Yeah, okay, then it's just there's common thing that happens.
Yep. If the outer edge looks nice and green, then you're doing great. It's going to keep going. That self-pruning is prevalent even in pines and everything else. Yeah. It's those branches that aren't efficient enough to produce enough sugars, the tree gets rid of them.
Yep. Great.
Okay, the other thing was I used to have moles in my backyard, and my one of my neighbors told me to put down pelleted lawn mine. I did that earlier with an aerator type. It worked fine. I have no signs of moles, but the drawback is you got to cut your grass more often.
Yeah, and the other thing that does happen is when you put that pelleted lime down, it gets rid a lot of the insect larvae that would normally be there don't survive as well. And so that's why the moles aren't coming in. They haven't got any food source.
Yeah, that's what he said, took away the food source.
Right.
And that's why the moles don't come around. Yep. Well, thank you very much for your show. You guys do a great job.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Richard. Appreciate it. Mary in Belleville, on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi, and thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
We have a Niagara white grape that did well last summer. This summer, we had a bunch of grapes on it in different areas. And before they got ripe, about a foot of the growth on which the grape cluster was dried up, and the grapes became so sour we just had to throw everything away. However, the vine itself is just doing beautifully.
Okay, there's a couple things that could be happening there, and I'm guessing. One is, are there brown spots or black spots on some of the leaves?
Yes, but not excessively. And actually now I would say no.
Yeah, it's because you have the new growth. But look at some of the older leaves.
Okay.
And if that's the case, it's probably black rot. What happens with the clusters is you tend to have a lot of those that really the berries don't develop. They tend to remain black and small. So that could be one of the problems. Niagara is kind of a borderline crop or for hardiness, and that's another issue that could be happening there. So you've got either a disease problem or possibly just, poor winter conditions. Like this year we had a lot of frost right when the grapes started to grow.
Yes.
They can't tolerate frost, and so then you get a second bud growing. And there are some, the third bud that starts growing after maybe 2 frosts is strictly vegetative. You won't find any clusters on that at all.
I suppose that's why our Swenson Red died.
Yeah, that could be winter injury as well.
Could I just ask one question?
Sure.
We have a strange thing happening with three trees on our property, and they're all several hundred feet apart from each other. And they have, there are three different varieties. The Kentucky coffee tree, about every 2 years, loses a few major limbs. And the place where they die back to, and these are big ones, the place where they die back to then, we take the limb off, and there's a huge growth of new stuff. The same thing is happening with a Amer maple. One of the trees, three trunks died, then the second one died, the third one looked ill, so we cut it off, and now the thing looks like a bush of Amer maple. And the third one is an ash tree, so I suspected green emerald ash borer disease, but apparently not. The tree started dying off from the lower branches going on up. The top leaves kind of remained a dark green, and then a flush of paley, weak-looking leaves started coming out at the bottom. Is this the same thing happening, and what could it be?
It's probably some root rot. That's one of the things. Oh. The other thing is the Kentucky coffee tree and your Amer maple, you're getting in an area where they are kind of borderline. In other words, they'll live a few years. And what happens is when you cut off a branch, it tends to send up a lot of new growth around it because there are a lot of little buds down in there that'll start.
Yes.
And it's just those two are the wrong tree for the wrong location. As for the ash, it could be some root rot problems that are causing some of that, and it's working its way up into the tree.
And that could be due to a wet season?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. And Bill in Rib Lake, on to you now. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Yeah, I have a question. My father had planted two apple trees. Oh, man, it's about 35 years ago from some rootstock that he found on an old farm. And, you know, they're showing their years, you know, so to speak. And I'm looking at planting another tree next to them, but a little lower down because in that area it tends to be a little more damp. I have a culvert that goes underneath the driveway, and I thought if that might be a good spot to plant it. Now, I've heard two arguments. One, that it might be too damp there, and then two, I have arguments both sides of the fence of planting in fall and planting in spring. And my thought for planting, you know, this time of the year, maybe even the end of September, something like that, the tree would still have moisture to get the roots started, and it could then stay over the winter. And when spring come, it would start growing again with a new spring moisture. Now, is there a problem with too much moisture with an apple tree? And is there a better time of the year?
One, there is a problem with too much moisture. They don't like wet feet. Where are you getting your trees? Are you just digging them up, or are you going for?
There are a couple people in the area who sell potted trees, and so I would buy a tree that's already, you know, several feet tall.
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, anything that's in a pot you can transplant any time during the year, and now would be a good time to be doing that. So you're okay.
Would be.
But if just something for you to think about, I would look at disease-resistant varieties. That kind of helps a little bit. Something like Red Free or Nova Easy Grow or a couple of examples. And you're going to have fewer pest problems because you're starting over. And also those trees, if they're on a good dwarfing-type rootstock, you can train them so that you should be able to reach every branch from the ground. In other words, anything that gets taller than 6 feet, cut it off. And that way, as a homeowner, you only eat so many apples in a year, and a small statured tree are going to produce a couple hundred apples, and you can take care of them.
All right.
Yeah, because this is vacation property, and so what I'm concerned about is, I mean, I'm getting all these warnings that there are deer and rabbits. Unfortunately, the deer are kind of vacant this year, but I didn't know if planting them would be a problem, but now you're saying this. I would still have a problem with moisture, though. Is there any good gauge that, well, maybe you got too damp an area? Because this year we have enough rain that you could grab the ground and bring it out.
Yep.
I mean, this has been a very wet time of the year for our area of the state.
Yep. If it's wet for, you know, we could go 3 years and then all of a sudden you have a wet year and it's going to take out your apple tree because the roots aren't getting enough oxygen. That's what happens.
This might not be a good vent.
No.
No, I would find a little higher spot.
Oh, okay.
All right. Thank you. Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Kate in Superior, hello.
Hello. I'm calling about a mature mountain ash that is about 10 feet tall and has bloomed beautifully this year. And now I see where a sapsucker has girdled it in three places. And there's a big debate among neighbors about is it attacking a sickly tree, or is this tree going to survive?
Well, if it's truly sapsuckers that are doing it, the reason they're making holes is because insects come in there every day and crawl in, and they go back through and they harvest the insects out of the holes. So that's probably what's going on. If they're digging out larger pieces, holes that are more than a half inch in diameter, then they're after some type of larvae that are between the bark and the wood. And that means your tree has been stressed enough over the years, and it's slowly being invaded by some type of insect borer.
Okay. So if it just seems superficial, then the tree could survive?
Yes.
Yeah. And would you spray it with any limb? You know, they have that black spray.
You should be able to not have to worry about that.
You don't have to?
No.
Okay. One other question. Do you know anything about azaleas and when to move them?
Okay. Azaleas move best in the spring after through blossoming.
Okay.
And you could do it now in the fall. The problem, what happens is when you move them, there's always some moisture stress because you damage some roots.
Right.
And the flower buds that are ready for next spring often die. And so you go through one season without any flowers.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Kate. Tony in La Crosse. On to you. Hi, Tony.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because I bought a house a couple of years ago, and shortly after I got it, I discovered that when it rains, the south wall of my garage floods. So I dug like a 4-foot deep trench along the house, and I'm going to put drain tile and stuff in there and try and seal it up. But I'm wondering if you could recommend a plant or shrub or something that I could plant there when I fill it all back in that'll be real thirsty and absorb a lot of water to help reduce some of that flooding.
Well, there's no plants that will absorb that much water. The other thing is I would look at putting eaves troughs and gutters and that type of thing on there so when the water does run off, you can channel that away. As for the one last suggestion is when you put your soil back in after you've put the rock and everything else down below, is try to have about 3 inches of good topsoil, and then you could probably plant many other types of perennials. Hostas should do pretty good in a wetter environment, and so that's something you might want to consider.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And Ann in Arena, hello to you.
I'm fine, and it's Eliva, actually.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. See, I have a question. I have a peony bush that I need to know how to take care of for the winter, and I also am thinking of moving it. When would be the best time to do that?
Yeah, moving those things is always a challenge. I would move it probably after you've had a good frost that kills off all the leaf tissue, and then try moving it and keeping it watered about a couple times a week, and hopefully it goes through. It most likely will not flower next spring because
okay.
The flower buds will be damaged, so if you want to move that. The other thing is those plants are like a zone 4, and up in your area, you're doing pretty good if you got one that's surviving.
I planted it in like 2004, and I bet you it's like 3 feet tall, and it had the most beautiful blooms on it.
Great.
Yep.
And then I also have a rose bush. I have no idea what kind. It was my grandmother's, and it came with the house when I purchased it. And it's real tall and spindly and not thick at all. And I think it had like maybe 5 or 6 blossoms on it this year. But I cleaned out all the old woody stuff, and I'm wondering what I can do to promote more fullness of growth instead of just having it be real tall. And I think I'm not sure if it's a climbing one or not.
Well, it could be a climbing one, and therefore it's just going to have a few stems that are going to grow upward. And those tend not to be the most winter hardy, and that's why you have few blossoms on one of the reasons why you might have fewer blossoms. The other thing is there was some tall spindly stuff that was coming out of North Dakota some varieties that were being grown up there that were fairly hardy. Those tend to have smaller flowers and have kind of an orangish color to them.
So there you have it. I'm out of time. Thanks, Ed, for calling. Appreciate it. Bob, thank you so much, and you'll come back in about a month or so.
Yeah, I think Jim's got me scheduled sometime in October.
All right, good. You'll be back in October. Bob Tomisch, Senior Lecturer in the Department of Horticulture at UW-Madison and UW-Extension. He'll be back in October. Coming Monday, Michelle Erickson of Wisconsin Literacy talks about the 1,200 Tutors for 12 Weeks campaign. Dr. Ruth Benka and David Plant discuss sleep issues. Stay with us.